Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
And we're back. Get ready to go here. Everybody's okay. All right. Levels are good. Mic is hot. Talent is hotter. Let's do this thing. Okay. Three S's. Star. Smile. Strong. And here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted to WGNplus.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and of course, the most important, tell your friends, send them a link, send them an email, send them a message, tell them that one of your favorite podcasts is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And if you are new or a veteran of the podcast and you like what you hear, don't forget you can go to WGNplus.com, go to the entertainment section, and then also see a prompt for Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, where you can find all previous 194 episodes, which can only mean one thing. Welcome to episode 195. We have earned the Good Housekeeping podcast seal of approval. If there was such a thing, I'm sure we would get it. But without that, I will just say that we have it and let them track us down. Welcome to episode 195. We will be going to the Pop Culture Club a little earlier than we usually do because, of course, we just had one of the pop culture milestones occur, and so I think it's certainly worthy of an entire episode to talk about what just happened, the debacle that just happened recently, and I'm not even talking about the Iowa caucuses, so can you imagine it's even worse than that. And so going to the Pop Culture Club with our regular contributor, Emily Arminetti. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Jim.
So, yes, the Iowa caucuses were a debacle, but I don't know if the Oscars were as bad or possibly worse. I don't know.
We always love a good kerfuffle.
Now, I don't know. We haven't even discussed. I don't know what you thought of it. So this is all virgin territory. In fact, we didn't really even talk about the nominees all that much. I don't even think we did.
Sometimes we do a little bit of a, sometimes we do predictions.
Well, you know, I mean, I've the reason I've sort of just kind of gone away from that is that, and then this year was proof of that, is that, you know, I didn't even see half the movies, and I predicted every, well, I didn't predict every winner. I shouldn't say that because I think, and that's part of some of my, but all the major acting nomination winners I predicted, and I never even saw a majority of those movies.
Right.
And you don't even have to. You could just, nowadays, it just seems like there are the certain people are either ordained or it's just kind of like it's their turn kind of thing and you see where it's going. And, I mean, I did see Brad Pitt in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Did you see that movie?
I did. I loved it.
Yeah, and I thought it was good, and I thought he was very good in that. Although
I thought he was very good, but I thought Leonardo DiCaprio was outstanding.
Yeah, and I thought that that Joe Pesci was great in The Irishman.
Well, I've only seen half of The Irishman because half of The Irishman is the length of a regular.
Yeah, most people have only seen half of the. In fact, I saw a statistic. The Irishman is 3.5 hours long.
Yeah,
and I saw a statistic that you know, because Netflix can obviously gauge when you shut off and turn back on because they do when you go to Netflix, you can actually pick up the show right where you left it off, which is a nice feature. A lot of them don't do that, and And I saw a figure early on when the film was first released on Netflix back in November or December that 70% of the people did not finish it in one sitting.
I mean, I'm not surprised. Who can? Who has time for that?
That was a lot. I mean, I saw it at the theater when it came out because I did want to see it when it first came out before it came out on Netflix a couple of weeks later. But I remember sitting in the theater, and I must say, to its credit as well, I mean, I did look at my watch, but I didn't look until the 3-hour mark.
Okay.
But I did look at my watch.
Did you get up to use the restroom?
No, I did not.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, I forget. You have an amazing ability like on planes.
Yeah, don't forget. I didn't go to the bathroom on a flight from Johannesburg to Atlanta. Right. A 17-hour flight. I didn't even stretch my legs.
Jim, that is truly a gift. I wish I had that gift.
Or it's an inflamed bladder. Or my bladder is so big that I don't know. I think I just will my bladder.
Right.
Because there's sometimes I can't make it from the couch to the bathroom.
You know? But somehow for flights and for extremely long Martin Scorsese
films,
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, it was so funny because even when I went to the theater, it was not to see the Irishman. It was not released in a wide release, not a lot of theaters, because it was basically a Netflix, you know.
Yeah.
Release, and so they put it out to theaters as kind of a cursory thing, just so it could be considered for Academy Award nomination. And so it was at a small theater in a small suburb here in Chicago, Highland Park, and a very small little theater, like right on a main street of the downtown. You know, not a big theater at all. Mm-hmm. And so I parked on the street, and the guy who owns the theater, he came out to talk to the audience before. I guess that's value added now. I could do without it, but, you know.
So, everybody, welcome to The Irishman.
Okay, yeah, I know I'm here. Let's go.
I'm going to be here for 3.5 hours.
Yeah, I know. I don't need a half hour of your shtickle. You know, I've already given up, you know, a half of my day. But then, you know, I didn't even notice, but he starts pointing out parking, and he goes, if anybody parked on the street, you know that's only 2-hour parking.
Oh.
And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not getting up now to move my car. So thankfully there were no tickets. But yeah, that was a long one. But you know, I thought that Joe Pesci just did such a great performance. He was so low-key in that movie, which would have been so easy not to be, knowing Joe Pesci and knowing the way Martin Scorsese films are with these big mobsters and these big, you know, personalities. And Joe Pesci just played that so quiet and so tame, and I think that was a really good acting job on his part, because you know that his inclination is to go big. You saw him; he always, you know, My Cousin Vinny,
and
you know, Goodfellas.
Well, even Goodfellas
and Raging Bull. I mean, yeah, he's always he plays it big, and so for him to have played it so low, he really, I thought, did an excellent job. But I think it was, you know, once again, just like, you know, it's time for Julia Roberts, and it was time for George Clooney, and I think it was time for Brad.
Well, it also makes me want, I mean, Brad certainly started to pick up momentum throughout the awards.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing that makes it so predictable, is like, it used to be, you know, like 20 years ago, that it was like the Oscars and the Golden Globes. Now, there are like 10 televised award ceremonies, and then you start to, you know, obviously the pattern emerges, but, yeah, and people pick up momentum. But like with Joe Pesci too, it kind of makes you wonder, like, how much of it has to do with the fact that he obviously was not showing up for any of these award ceremonies.
Yeah, he did not. Yeah, he did not show up for
really,
any.
I haven't read anything about why, and the only thing, maybe there is a reason, or maybe he said it, or maybe he hasn't, but I mean, I guess he's been mostly retired, and then so he came out of retirement to do this role, and maybe he just went right back into retirement. Was like,
yeah.
I mean, he's never really been, even when he won an Oscar, I think it was for Goodfellas, and he literally said like,
yeah, he said thank you
like
very
10
much,
words,
yeah, you know? And then he was gone. Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, according to the story, I mean, De Niro had to call him, like, I mean, I don't know if it was an exaggeration, but the story was that they had to call him like 50 times to say he did not want to do it. He just did not want to do it anymore. He's done it. Like you said, he was retired and he was done acting. And then finally, I think they appealed to his sentimental value of just saying, look, this could be the last time that, you know, Scorsese and De Niro and him and then Al Pacino added into the mix ever get a chance to work together. And so I think he realized. But yeah, I thought Leonardo DiCaprio was very good in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And he just got so overlooked immediately by Joaquin Phoenix. There was no question that Joaquin Phoenix was going to win that award by anyone. That Leonardo DiCaprio's performance just, no one even talked about it. It was just a given. And the one thing that really shocked me, if you did see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and if you haven't, I would suggest that you you certainly rent it or stream it or whatever you can do when it becomes available. I thought one of the and that's another long movie. That was like two and a half hours, 2:40. It was a long movie.
Yeah, it was very long.
But I don't know about you, but I'll bring it up here. I figured, and that movie came out in the summer, so it, you know, it's easy to be forgotten. But I thought out of that entire movie, 2 hours and 40 minutes, whatever it was, the most compelling scene, and to your point about Leonardo DiCaprio's acting, I thought the best scene in that movie is probably one that nobody even remembers or mentions, but was the scene between Leonardo DiCaprio and that little girl.
Oh, Julia Butters?
Yeah. And I thought, it's about a 10-minute scene. And it's so small and so intimate and so quiet, but I thought for sure that she would get a nomination.
She was really fantastic. She's young. She's like 10 years old.
I know. I mean, she is like this little kid, and she went toe-to-toe with Leonardo DiCaprio in a very, as I said before, a very small one-on-one scene, just him and her. But my gosh, like I said, for a 10-year-old kid, she went right up with him. There was no, boy, he's so good and he's carrying her. No. Mm-hmm. And I was so surprised that I didn't read a lot about that scene in the reviews and around awards time. I mean, they were handing out a lot of award nominations to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, you know, Tarantino, the script, the acting, the costumes, the cinematography. And I was really shocked to see that she did not get any kind of real big notice on that. I don't even know her name. What's her name?
Julia Butters.
And was she ever, I never even saw her before. Was she in stuff before?
Okay, so she is a star of the sitcom, or one of the stars of the sitcom American Housewife, which is on ABC.
Is she really?
It's a cute show. I think it used to be on, like, I don't know if you ever watched the show Blackish. That's also
That whole kind of ABC family.
They used to be back to back. Maybe they still are. And so I really like Blackish, so I watched that a lot. And then I started watching American Housewife. I don't watch it all the time, but like occasionally.
She is on that show.
She's very good. She plays one of the three kids. She plays the youngest child on the show. And she is really good on that show, too.
Wow.
When I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, she was a familiar face to me, and I knew that she was good. But, like, I agree with you. Oh. I think really, truly, in this film, especially because she is. I mean, think about the talent that she's working with.
That's what I'm saying.
And she's only 10 years old.
Yeah, she was not intimidated, and it's an interesting scene within that movie. It really is kind of the most telling scene about Leonardo DiCaprio's character. It's really a defining scene in that movie for such a long movie that has a lot of layers and a lot of plot lines. I was very impressed, and I'm looking forward to seeing her act again, but I was a little disappointed that she did not get more recognition. Now, I have to say, I did see Marriage Story. The funny thing is, this year I've probably seen more movies than I've seen in many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was happy to say that most of the movies I saw all got nominated. So at least I knew I wasn't wasting my time. But could you tell me why Laura Dern was so great?
I don't know, because I only watched, like, I've only seen, like, the first 30 minutes of Marriage Story, and it was so dark that I was like, I think it's hard as a married person. I think it's hard to watch.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Or even if you're not married yet, you might be like, ooh, this doesn't look so good to
me. Yeah, there's a few moments where you go like, ooh.
So, like, I didn't even get to the Laura Dern part. I will eventually.
Oh, you didn't even see her? I mean, don't get me wrong. Laura Dern is a very good actress.
Mm-hmm.
I've always enjoyed her from her, one of the first roles I ever saw her in was in Blue Velvet, where she played the blind girl with Kyle MacLachlan.
Yeah.
And she was great in that. And then she was great in Mask. And then she was great in some other David Lynch films. And she's been great in, you know, Dirty Little Lies. Or what is it? Pretty Little Lies?
Big Little Lies.
Big Little Lies. You know,
you're confusing it with one of my other favorite shows, Pretty Little Lies.
Yeah, right, I know. But I just felt like I felt like the role that she played in that, I've seen that performance before.
Yeah, so I mean, I think a lot of people are saying, like, look, I think a lot of people are viewing this as like, this is more of her, like,
right, her career payback.
I don't want to say a lifetime achievement award, but in a sense, like, you know, you've been doing great work consistently over the years, and it's now your time. Like you said, you know, George Clooney had his time and Julia Roberts had her time. And, you know, when they won, maybe it wasn't even for the best role that they had ever played. But, you know, in the case of Laura Dern, I mean, I think also that category, while all of the female actors in that category did a really, I mean, they're all very great actresses. I feel like it was a little bit of a weak category this year. I only say that because, I don't know, like, I haven't actually seen the other films, and they're all heavy hitting actresses for sure. But I feel like I haven't read raves about any of their performances specifically. So I think that one maybe was kind of an easy one to give to Laura Dern.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She didn't have, there was no one else in that category that was like, whoa, this is really like, this is going to be a tough one, you know, so.
Well, the role, and as you'll see when you see the film, you know, I mean, once again, we are in a very, you know, kind of female empowerment kind of era right now. And her role was as this, you know, very hard-nosed, you know, female lawyer who was, you know, there to sort of espouse, you know, Scarlett Johansson's, you know, role here in this divorce and be strong. And so she was certainly presenting a very pro-woman, pro-empowerment message within her character. Her character was very confident and empowered, and she was trying to impart that onto Scarlett Johansson in the film. And so I think, you know, given the climate, you know, that's certainly not a surprise. But as I said, I think, you know, that was one thing that was kind of boring until the Best Picture, but we'll get to that. But it was very predictable. Renee Zellweger, who, I mean, I don't even know anybody. Did you see that movie, the Judy Garland
movie? I did.
You are the fourth person.
Okay.
To have seen it, that. I don't think anybody...
Well, you have to realize that The Wizard of Oz is my favorite movie.
Oh, I know that.
Of all time.
No, I know that. But my point is, that movie, I don't think anybody even saw that movie. That movie came and went.
Well...
It made no money at the box office.
I mean, even before the movie was over, I was like, just give her the Oscar now.
And they were talking about that months before the movie ever came out. They were already touting this, and this to me was the most no-brainer. I mean, you knew she was going to win it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the thing about it is, and especially because I idolized Judy Garland growing up, just because I just, at 5 years old, watched The Wizard of Oz and was just like so enamored with this whole thing.
That's why you love Scarecrow so much.
Watching the movie, first of all, Judy focuses on the last few years of Judy Garland's life. There are some flashbacks to her childhood, so you get a sense of what she went through as a kid. But it focuses on those last few years, which were really tough and really dark years for her. And, you know, not only is Renee Zellweger, like, playing someone who is, you know, very well known, you know, someone who is a real person, that's always a challenge, I think. But, and someone who's also iconic too, but, she's also playing a role where someone is just really going through a lot. There's a lot of drama happening. And you watch the film and you just completely, you feel like you're watching Judy Garland. You don't feel like she just completely disappears into this character. And so I just thought, you know, there's no way. It's like she can't lose. There's no way.
Well, like I said, that was that, even for someone who didn't see the film or anything, that would seem to be a no-brainer. I did not see the Joker, but just from the rave reviews about Joaquin Phoenix, you knew he was going to win that. You know, that was a fait accompli. There was just no question he was going to win that, and he did win all the major awards for that. So the acting awards were very were almost cemented in stone. Usually there's always one kind of curveball that they throw in there. Mostly it's a lot of times it is for a supporting role. But this year they all went according to script. Little did we know that the biggest curveballs were going to be for some of the biggest awards, which really is the shocker. But so first I want to talk about the show in general. So I remember several years ago, two or three years ago, when we first talked about this, and I mentioned how I didn't think that the Academy Awards or any award shows needed even to have a host.
Right.
And you were shocked by that comment. And then the next year, of course, they didn't have a host. So now here we are 2 or 3 years later. I still don't believe there's a need for a host, but I also don't know. They don't know what to do without a host. You know, they don't know what to do with a host, but then they sort of have a semi-host. You know, they still, you know, it's either commit or don't.
Right.
You know, either don't have a host and let the show just proceed with the presenters coming out, but then I don't need to have Beanie Feldstein, whatever her name is, you know, or the other woman from the Star Wars movies sitting on top of you know, on the side of boxes like she's just hanging out. There's no need for that then. Just let the presenters come out and do the thing. There's nobody you know that you know, either commit to it or not. And so that I thought, I was surprised to see Steve Martin and Chris Rock come out. It was very awkward. They were funny. But it was
awkward. I thought they were funny. I think it was awkward because I think they were making some jokes that were potentially uncomfortable for people in the room, which, again, like, I cannot believe these people in Hollywood show up for these award shows.
And then they get uncomfortable.
They seem totally unprepared to hear things that might be uncomfortable. And they know, like, especially like for the Golden Globes and Ricky Gervais. It's like, Ricky Gervais, you're not, like, what you see is what you get. You know he's not going to shy away from saying anything. And the fact that so many of his jokes bombed because they were about things that people in Hollywood find uncomfortable, I was like, please, you guys need to get a sense of humor.
Well,
like,
not even that. Well, not even that. But, you know, what kills me is these people are the most cutthroat, jealous, you know, competitive people. Who in their private lives, you know, they say and think things that are as politically incorrect as anybody, but they put on this facade how they are just aghast.
Right.
I mean, you know, Tom Hanks shaking his head like he's Jimmy Stewart, you know, this is, you know, like to your point at the Golden Globes, like, oh, this is outrageous. It's like, what are you talking about? If you ever watched, I mean, Tom Hanks ran around on Bosom Buddies with a dress, and now suddenly he's all, you know, he's passing judgment on people. I mean, come on. And so, and none of, you know, at the end of the day, they're all jokes. To your point, just lighten up. You're in the entertainment business. You're not at the UN. But could I just ask you a question now?
Yes.
Now look, you know, I'm about 10 years older than you. Mm-hmm. I will admit.
Oh, I think I know what's coming.
We'll see. We'll see how good you are.
Okay.
I will admit that I am not up to date on the music of the young people.
Okay.
Am I going down the road you thought?
Yes, you are. Okay.
I don't know what the hell that opening sequence was. At all.
Oh, the opening sequence. Okay, so a different road.
Why? What were you going
to
say?
I thought this was going to be about Eminem, which I do think we need to come on to.
Oh, we will talk about that, too.
Well, look, I mean, Jim, I'm going to say this. The opening, I mean, first of all, the opening sequence, it just goes to show what happens when you don't have a host. You just get some really disjointed, you throw something together.
Oh, my God. I don't know what that was. I mean, now what's her name?
Janelle Monáe.
Okay. Does she have a lot of hit songs?
She is a popular recording artist, but she also she's been acting, and she's been in some decent stuff.
Because,
I mean,
she is not a singer.
And I get it.
These people that have hits today, you know, they are mostly studio creations. And even when you saw the Super Bowl halftime show, the strip show that was on with Jennifer Lopez and Shakira, these are not singers. They are performers. They have music and dancers and sound effects to help their voices. They don't have real. They're not real singers. And this Janelle, what's her name?
Monáe.
She could not sing at all. She was off key. And then I'm sorry, but you don't do shout outs at an Oscars. You're not in a concert asking people to come back, yo, whatever she was doing with that. That was the most ridiculous. And then the best part is she got a standing ovation.
Yeah, I mean, look, again, like, I feel like they don't have a host, so they feel like they need to open up. They need to open somehow. They need to bring a lot of energy and get people, like, excited right away. And that was, like, their way of doing it. But
I almost shut it off. I was like, if this is where we're going. I mean, first of all, she came out with the Mr. Rogers thing. Okay, you have to understand, that movie was a flop. That movie did not. I mean, Tom Hanks got a cursory nomination. I understand he was pretty good in it. That's fine. But that movie was certainly did not, given its prominence, how it wound up doing, it did not deserve the prominence at the Oscars, except that Tom Hanks sat in the front.
Right.
And I don't know if you saw this, but my gosh, were they blowing light on the people in the front row?
Were they doing what?
They were blowing light on them to make them look 30 years younger. Because, I mean, I couldn't even see Tom Hanks' face after a while. There was so much light on him.
Right.
You would think that Hillary Clinton was in the front row. I mean, they were just blasting light to make these people look younger. But so she comes out doing that, and I told my wife, I said, okay, I don't even know who this woman is who's singing. I said, but this is not the whole thing here. This quiet Mr. Rogers thing. I said, something's going to happen, because I could feel it. To your point that they want to create some energy and start things off on some big thing. I said, something's going to happen. And then all of a sudden, she made a little growl in her voice. I said, get ready. And then I don't know what the hell that was. That was so just all over the top. It was. I was sitting there going, okay, so now, as much as I said, to your point, that we don't need a host. Oh, my God. I look at my wife and I said,
but you don't want a host, and this is what you get.
Well, I know. I said, you know what? After I saw that debacle, I said, this has me wanting a Jimmy Kimmel monologue.
Right.
You know, how
or a Billy Crystal montage of inserting himself into the Best Picture nominee.
As hacky as that is. I mean, yeah, I mean, if that's the alternative, oh, my gosh. I mean, so, and then I said, I said, as she was singing this and doing this whole thing, I said, and you know darn well she's going to get a standing ovation, and sure enough, she did. And I'm like, okay, the standing ovation now in our culture has been completely devalued. There is nothing special about a standing ovation, because we give standing ovations to anything now.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you ever go to? Do you ever go to a theater?
I was a little put off by the.
Do you ever go to a live theater? Do you ever go to a live theater performance, like a play or a musical?
Of course.
Yeah.
Tons.
I mean, people just now automatically at the end of the show stand up.
Well, I think for something like that, it's nice to show, you know, the people who worked really hard.
Well,
on
I understand.
Stage.
Hey, look, yeah, I've been on both sides. I mean, I've been up on the stage.
We're already patting you on the back for something that, in the grand scheme of things, is, you know.
Yeah, it just seems to me
that you have an amazing job that you get paid handsomely for. And
I mean,
you know.
Believe me, as somebody who's acted, I mean, it's very nice to when you're on the stage. It's nice to see that. It's very nice. I get it. But that used to be really reserved for something really special.
Well, this is okay. So when Joaquin Phoenix went up to get his award, he got a standing ovation. I was like, what is this?
I know. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
First of all, he's the last person in the world. He doesn't even want to be there. Oh. He doesn't even want to be on that stage. And so sit down. You know, like, why are you all standing up for him?
Then once again, he gave, I thought he couldn't be any more incoherent than he was at the Golden Globes.
Oh, no. I disagree. At the Golden Globes, he was hammered.
Yeah, well, yeah. But I'm just saying. But still, this thing, when he started talking about cows and reproduction, I didn't even.
Let me tell you something, because I agree. Both his speech and Renee Zellweger's speech, I was like, wow, bizarre. We'll just put those in the category of bizarre. But, like, for Joaquin Phoenix, it's like, I've been thinking about it, okay? And, like, he... for sure, the speech, I was like, whoa, here we go. Honestly, does this guy have the weight of the world on his shoulders or what? You know, it really made me kind of feel for him, because I'm like, hey, man, lighten up. Like,
you just won an award. I know.
Right? And I don't think any of us will ever look at a cup of coffee or a bowl of cereal in the same way. But that's fine, because that's what he wants. Right. But, like, honestly, it made me realize, like, He does not like the idea of awards. He is deeply uncomfortable with all this stuff, all this awards hoopla and everything. And I think, like, he must have just set out this award season when it became clear that he was going to be on the circuit and he was just going to have to do it. I think he set out to, this was his grand plan. Like, because every award he's accepted, he's been planting seeds along these lines. And I think, in a way, his Oscar speech was his most coherent speech, because he kind of finally tied it all together in a sense. And I guess what he was really trying to say is, I am deeply uncomfortable with all of this, but if I have to stand up here and say anything to an audience, like a global audience of this many people, I'm going to, like, preach about the stuff that I care about. And he is really, like, he's a dedicated activist. You know, he went straight from the Golden Globes, literally straight from winning a Golden Globe, to, like, this, there's, like, a weekly, like, peaceful protest. I think it's at, like, I want to say it's maybe at, like, a pig farm or slaughterhouse or something. And he goes every week. They said he goes every week. He went straight from the Golden Globes to that, because that's his thing. He goes every week. He wasn't going to miss it. He showed up in his tuxedo for the thing. So, you know, he does actually live by all of this stuff. It's not like he just likes to throw out a few, you know, political things or whatever. So I was kind of glad about that. And I was glad, you know, and I was mostly glad that in the end he quoted his brother, who, right, you know, most Reverend people remember Phoenix. Was right. A very talented actor who died at 23, who probably would have had many Oscar worthy performances after that had he lived longer. But, and I thought that was a very nice note to end on. But I mean, yeah, like, I feel like this whole award season has totally been leading up to that for him, because he doesn't want to say anything else. You know, he doesn't want to pat himself on the back. He doesn't want to act like he's winning a Nobel Prize because he's an actor, like a lot of these people do. And when they go on and on in their speeches, to a certain extent, I'm like, all right, sit down. You're not winning the Nobel Prize, okay? Like, enough. Like, when they start to really
and you know, it's interesting what you said about River Phoenix, because he really was a very good actor. A good-looking guy. He had the whole package.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what I always think about in the case of someone like that who dies very young, right at sort of the beginning of their ascent, I look at the same way, like with James Dean, who only made 3 movies and then, you know, died in a car accident when he was 25. And I wonder, to your point about River Phoenix, and I equate him with James Dean, in that I always think when I see, and I don't get me wrong, I'm a huge am a fan of Paul Newman. I think Paul Newman was a very good actor and really a true movie star, and some great movies. But I also think that Paul Newman probably benefited from James Dean's death, in that many of the roles that Paul Newman got, I wonder if James Dean would not have been cast in those same roles.
Right.
Because if James Dean was around, he would have been a force and a box office, draw. And he would have, I could see James Dean in Cool Hand Luke. You know, I could see James Dean in A Cat on a Hot Tin Roof with Elizabeth Taylor after they just did Giant together. So, I mean, I think a lot of Paul Newman's great roles may have gone to James Dean. And who knows if Paul Newman would have been the same star that he was if James Dean had not died. And the similar situation with River Phoenix, I wonder if Leonardo DiCaprio would be as big of a star today if River Phoenix was still alive. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's interesting because I've heard Leonardo DiCaprio talk about River Phoenix in interviews and said that he really looked up to him as an up and come when he was coming up, you know, in Hollywood.
Yeah.
He really looked up to River Phoenix.
I mean, can't you
really,
from what you remember,
affected by his death.
When you remember River Phoenix's roles, can't you see a lot of the same roles that Leonardo DiCaprio got? Couldn't you have seen River Phoenix in those roles?
Oh, yeah.
I could.
Yeah, I mean, there's no telling like what he could have done. And this is why I'm so glad. I mean, and there was no doubt in my mind that if Joaquin Phoenix won, he was going to reference his brother in some way. Because based on everything I've ever read, they were very close. He was there at the time that his brother died. I believe that they were the only boys in their family. So that was his only brother, if I'm not mistaken.
And
obviously he followed in his footsteps as an actor, you know. And I had no doubt that he was going to mention him. But I thought it was a really, really sweet, poignant way to do it.
Yeah,
but then, of course, it had to be tacked on to
that other stuff.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But then again, you say, I mean, again, like, I thought he was a lot more coherent than he was.
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, I to be honest with you, when he started, I sort of started to zone out because I was like, oh, here we go again. And
wait, what? Now we're talking about calves being ripped from their mothers? I get what he's going for. On the flip side, like, Renee Zellweger, not even on the flip side, on the same side, what was she talking about?
I have no idea. I don't know where these people... You know what kills me is these people, once again, and I hate to sound that way, but, I mean, here are... these people they perform in front of people. They perform, you know, whether it's in front of a camera or whatever. They certainly began acting somewhere on a stage. And I am just baffled how they are so inarticulate, how they are so they are able to corral their emotions for a role and a part, and then when they don't have a script or when they're just trying to be themselves, they are the most scattered, the most unfocused. You would think that this person, there is no way this person makes a living performing or talking in front of people. I mean, it's just amazing. I don't understand how both sides of their brains work, because it is unbelievable. And especially these are people that have to be, they have to be prepared. They have to learn lines. So why wouldn't you, if you're nominated for any award, how do you not write a speech?
Right. Well, look, I think a small majority of them are charming enough that they can pull it off, and they in some ways are even more charming when they're off the cuff. And when I say that, I'm thinking of people like Jennifer Lawrence, you know.
Yeah, but you know what?
Up to accept an Oscar and then was so charming and funny in that moment, in that unplanned moment of like most people would be totally humiliated and it would make them more nervous. And so like someone like her or even like Brad Pitt, although I do think he prepares some of his remarks, it comes across as being a little bit off the cuff, but still good.
If they're off the cuff, they're actors. So whatever you think is off the cuff.
Most of these people should call up their writer friends.
I know.
And be like, I need a speech.
Oh, I mean, I'm sorry, but Brad Pitt had writers because Brad Pitt has never been that funny and articulate in his entire life. He has never put that many words together that have been coherent on his own. It's true. I mean, he's a nice looking guy. From what I understand, he's always been a huge pothead, you know, and so whenever you saw him, he always looked like he was stoned. He was always with that smile. And now suddenly is he sober, which is great. But there's no doubt he had somebody writing those. He did not come up with the line "Once upon a time in Hollywood," you know, whatever he said, you know, talk about, ain't that the truth? That was not a Brad Pitt line, okay? That was a Quentin Tarantino
line.
Well,
then good for him for doing what we think they should do.
Yes, exactly.
Call your screenwriter friends,
yes,
get
exactly.
them to write you something.
This is my point. But, you know, so anyway, back to the show. So that opening sequence, to me, damned everything because the show then had no pace. It had no sense of that to me, you know, the Oscars at the end of the day, at least in my view, are supposed to be what Hollywood is all about. It's about escapism and elegance and stars. And that opening was so off the mark that when Steve Martin and Chris Rock had to follow that, I think that's why their set to me felt awkward, because that was not the kind of a, I mean, I'm not condemning if that's what she does and people like that, that's great. It's just that did not belong at an Oscars. If that's what she does as part of her career and all the dancing and the screaming and all that other stuff, that's fine. But that's not what you're supposed to open up the Oscars with.
Well, you are not going to want to hear what I have to say about this, but that's why you need a host.
Well, I know, but because to your point, I understand that. So now they, in the absence of a host, then they think they have to go to the other side of the coin here and create some over the top thing, which is not the case. Why couldn't Steve Martin and Chris Rock just walked out and done that at the beginning of the show?
And that's the other thing too. My biggest issue too with some of these bigger set pieces is why, so then, like, don't do that and then try to play anyone off the stage when they're actually giving
that's what I'm saying. How about playing off the best picture?
Right. Well, this is what I'm saying. And it's annoying on one hand. So it's annoying already that really big stars can go on and on and on and on, not even making sense, and they would never, ever get played off the stage. But then these people who made the best picture of the year, why? Because they're not big stars, because they're from South Korea. Like, it annoys me that they don't get the same respect.
Oh, well, yeah.
But especially when so much of the show is taken up by all of this filler stuff.
And like I said, the only reason why I have become anti-host, I have not always been anti-host. Why I became anti-host is because, and I believe it was Ellen DeGeneres, when the host became more important than the event. When Ellen DeGeneres went and did that selfie and she walked out into the audience and started talking to people and made it into her talk show, that's not, as I said before, there's supposed to be a level of professionalism and elegance and class to the Oscars. And when you start to bring it down to another level, then you ruin the whole mystique of it. And that's why I think in many ways the Oscars are becoming irrelevant. They're not.
Well, why do you think Nicole Kidman looked so disturbed that she had to shake hands with like a commoner?
I know. Well, but right? my point is,
Ellen brought into the Dolby Theater wherever they were having.
Well, yeah. But my point is, when Ellen did that and had the world's biggest selfie, then now whoever hosted afterward, which was Jimmy Kimmel the next year, I believe. Now you had to create another kind of audience, and now you started to get shtickle going on. So now he brought the tour bus in and all those people.
Oh, right. Oh, that's who it was. That's what Nicole Kidman looked like. Right. Like, how dare someone force her to interact with a member of the unwashed masses? Right. And it was Jimmy Kimmel, actually.
Yeah, it was Jimmy Kimmel. So my point is, so now that started to become now a part of the show, where now the host, because most of these people are talk show hosts, now they have to bring their own brand of humor or their own personality into the show. That's not your job. When you're hosting that, you are supposed to be the show is the star, and you aren't even the captain.
But see, I think that has more to do with who, because like Ellen and Jimmy Kimmel, that's like par for the course for them when they're doing their daily shows
I like them, but you don't bring that. Because to your point, when Jimmy Kimmel has to do a 20-minute skit with a tourist bus, then that's cutting out from the awards and the people and the time that they're giving them. How come Brad Pitt said, I only have 45 seconds up here, but Janae Mané had 25 minutes?
Right. So here's what I'm thinking. Maybe they need more I think one of the years in recent memories when it really worked for me was when Alec Baldwin and Steve Martin hosted. Didn't they host a handful of years ago?
Yeah. And they did
and
a
they
very good
it
job.
And they kept it very brief and to the point.
And
they
that's
had
my
their,
point.
You know.
When you go back, you know, people, you may have been too young, but people, and it's, I'm sure it's on YouTube, but when you go back, and I was a little kid, and I still got it. Even as a little kid, I understood. Bob Hope and Johnny Carson were the two most, prevalent, and that's not the right word, but, consecutive, and that's not the word either, but they hosted many of the Oscars. Now, Johnny Carson and Bob Hope, at that time, they were the biggest stars in the world. No, you couldn't quite, whether you liked them or not, regardless, in their eras, at that time, they were the biggest stars in the world. And and they still got it. They still understood that their job was not to upstage the show.
Right.
And that's what happens with today's hosts. Today's hosts feel that they have to be upstaging. They still have to create that 10-minute viral video that goes that plays the next day. They've got to create, and that's not your job. Your job is to set a tone, and that show had no tone, had no pacing. It was from the beginning of that musical thing brought it was when Steve Martin came back. I mean, you could see that they were like, okay, how do we fix this up? And it was such an awkward transition from what she just did to them coming out with tuxedos. As I said, she's if you like her, that's fine. That didn't belong there at all at the Oscars. And it really, to me, set the whole pace for the show, which was completely disjointed. Now let's talk about Eminem. What the hell did that represent?
Well, see, I, to me...
But here's my question. I'll tell you why.
First, I'm going to say, I thought, like, I understood why, like, Martin Scorsese looked very confused, you know, and some of the other members. But, like, Idina Menzel.
Oh, she was hilarious.
Like, hold on a second. Idina Menzel, you are, like, my generation.
Yeah, why was
okay,
she?
Okay, why are you so confused by Emmett? Why do you look so, like, put off?
Because you have to understand the world she comes in. You know, she's from the musical world. She never even heard of Eminem.
Okay, well, guess what? Let me introduce you to Oscar winner Eminem, because Eminem, like it or not, it has an Oscar.
That was so fun. But my point is,
I think the connection. So a lot of people felt like that was confusing. I don't think it was confusing. They did a montage before the sound editing award category was presented. They did a montage of clips of Oscar winning songs from the movies they were in, and the very last song was his song, Lose Yourself, and they started it, and then he popped up to finish it live. And so, to me, it wasn't that confusing, but maybe a lot of people were confused because they don't know or remember that he won an Oscar for that. I don't know.
Well, first of all, it's just, you know, that's fine. But then, I mean, I could make the argument then you could bring back anybody. My point is
Well, of course you could.
My point is that once again, Eminem, I understand, when the movie came out and he won the best song, okay, that was in the context of that. But now, you know, that was 20 years ago. And there's a whole group of people now in this world where pop music, they have, you know, rap music is not even in their purview. They don't even, like I said, that's why, as John Travolta would say, a dim mazim. Remember when?
Yeah, what did he say?
Remember when he introduced her? And now a dim mazim.
No, it wasn't a dim mazim. Wait, hold on. Now I have to know.
But my point is, once again, I understand that they want.
And by the way, Idina Menzel looked less confused when John Travolta introduced as a completely different name than she did when she saw Eminem.
But my
on
point
stage.
Is, once again, you know,
Adele Dazeem.
Adele Dazeem.
Oh my gosh!
But my point is that if you're going to have the, if you're going to put the Oscars up, like it is the magical night in Hollywood, then you cannot try to acquiesce to modern tastes. All, you know, the Oscars, and that's all about history. That's what the Oscars is. And as much as, to your point, I understand what you're saying. Hey, this guy won an Oscar for best song, so why can't he do it? I get that. But in the world of the Oscar world and of movie worlds, you're more in your mind about what the Oscars mean and what Hollywood means. You're thinking more about Gene Kelly than you are about Eminem. You know what I'm saying?
Well, look, I mean, I guess I have two things to say to that. One, Jim, you know better than anyone else, because we talk about this a lot, how desperate they are for an audience and for ratings and to stay relevant. And in order to stay relevant with a younger demographic.
Well, you know what? They didn't.
Eminem is my generation. Let's not get it wrong. But at the same time, look, he's got a new album coming out. He is still relevant in pop culture.
I understand.
And maybe this is a grasp. They're like grasping.
Yeah, and you know what? They got the lowest ratings in the history of an Oscar telecast. 23.6 million, the lowest ever. So this is my point. In your efforts to appeal, my point is, if you're the gold standard, the way I look at it is, if you're cool, then what you want to do is bring people to you. You don't change your cool to match everyone else's. They are supposed to come to you. This is the Oscars. This is what we do.
Okay, I have a question. If they had ended that montage clip with Goodfellas and with the Layla piano exit, and then Eric Clapton appeared on stage and played Layla, would you feel the same way?
No, but you know what they should have done? And I'm not even a fan of this. This is totally schmaltzy to me. But my point is, that's what this is. That's what the Oscars are. You know what they should have done? Barbara Streisand should have sang The Way We Were. Okay? That's what this is.
By the way, a little bit of trivia. Did you know that it was Barbara Streisand who actually presented the award that Eminem
won?
Oh,
did she really?
But he was not there. Yeah, she was.
Oh, I didn't know
and
that.
She seemed genuinely, if you go back and you Google that clip, she seemed genuinely shocked
that
he won this award. But he was not there at the ceremony, so one of his collaborators accepted it. So she did not actually give him the award.
All my point is that when you start, if you have a brand, which the Oscars are, if you start to change your brand in order to reflect or attract the latest fad, then you're diluting your brand. The Fonz was always the Fonz. And when he got to be, and then when, and later as the show got on, he wasn't as cool as he used to be. And they ruined him. You got to, you, if you're cool, you're cool. And you always be cool. And make the people come to you. You don't go to them. That's what makes you unique. I could see what I could see Eminem and Janelle Monáe, whatever.
So it's Janelle Monáe. Janelle Monáe. Oh, jeez.
I could see them at the Grammys. That's where they belong. That's where all the screaming and the strobe lights. That's where that belongs. But for the Oscars, as schmaltzy as it may be, as white bread as it may look, as outdated, that's what the Oscars are.
It's or how about this one? Here's what they should have done, and you probably could get on board with this. They should have had him perform with Elton. His buddy Elton John,
right, exactly.
Who was there.
Right. But to me, that just seemed, because first of all, whether that song won the best song of the year award or the Oscar for best song, you know, that was not what you think about when you think about a best winning Oscar song. You know what I'm saying?
You're talking about Elton's song?
No, I'm talking about Eminem's.
Oh, Eminem's song.
Yeah,
yes,
for him to come out and start screaming.
You can't think of, just because he's a certain genre doesn't mean he should get shut out.
I'm not saying why. He's not shut out. He won the Oscar. But my point is, when you put on this show is supposed to reflect the magic and the mystery and the elegance and the history of the Oscars, 92 years. And there, and as much as you want to admit it or not, here's what you just said. You just said when you were a little kid and you watched The Wizard of Oz and you loved Judy Garland, that's what I'm talking about. Those stars, those eras, whether it's from a bygone day, that's what Hollywood is. Hollywood is still Rick and Ilsa at the airport. That's what it is. So to try to upgrade it or to try to make it more relevant in today's thing, I got news for you. If 23 million people only watched it, you were not reaching the young people that you thought you were. So
right.
They didn't see. Whatever efforts you made, they didn't see them. When you did this, the people that you did watch, you turned them off because they're sitting there going, what the hell am I watching? Even Madil Mazil was like, what am I watching? And she's in the audience.
Idina Menzel.
she's in the audience. So what was happening to people in Kansas when Janelle Monel came out and started screaming at the audience? What were they thinking? And what were they thinking when Eminem came out? This is my point. So in an effort to be cool and relevant, those people you were trying to reach never even tuned in. And the people that did tune in, you were not speaking their language because they were sitting there going, I would like to see the Hollywood that this is supposedly celebrating. And that's why they have to really sit down, because I think the Oscars, I mean, I'm close to a point here where I'm like, you know what? Did I wasted 3.5 hours?
Well, it always feels like, I mean, look, I think overall, honestly, my walk away feeling was, after once Brad Pitt won his first acting award and finished giving a speech, everything after that felt extremely dull. You know?
Well, how could, then here's another
even
thing.
Even the fashion, because usually my saving grace is like, even if the show is kind of boring, I always right. have the fashion. To,
and those,
even the fashion no, yeah. this year was yeah. dull.
And I have to say now, Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig, they think they're Amy Poehler and Tina Fey. They are not. They are far from it. That was the most awkward 20 minutes. Once again, you talk about you have to play off the winners of Best Picture. We've been waiting 3.5 hours to see what the Best Picture are, and they're playing them off, but they give Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph 10 minutes to do that bullshit that was was horrible. There's no way they even practiced that in front of anybody. And they said this will be hilarious. I'm still in baffled. I don't know if they're and were their dresses supposed to be jokes or not.
I agree with you. I did not think they were funny, but I generally think that they are both very funny.
But that was terrible.
People, but not that. No. Whatever that.
Yeah, whatever that was. Now here's my other
whatever
question.
that bit was. Yeah. Was not.
Now
funny.
Here's another question. Why every year? The In Memoriam has taken on a world of its own, right? Now, everybody looks forward to this. It's been about 10 years now. They started to do this. It becomes a nice little thing. It's a big deal. Who's going to sing the song? It's now a major, segment of the show. Why continually, annually, do they always omit people? So the next day, we have to have this list of all the people that they did not mention.
I know. I have the same question.
And, and if you watched it this year, half the people were behind-the-scenes people that they did feature that you never even heard of.
Which I'm okay with, making sure that the behind-the-scenes
I understand that, but you also but have to... But you have to make sure that the other people are still rep. That's fine if you want to show the behind the scenes people, but don't omit people who deserve to be shown. Since this is once again a celebration of stars and actors and movies,
right? And I also think there has to be someone with some common sense on this team that's working on this because, and you're going to say I'm biased because you know how much I love Luke Perry. But
I know.
He was omitted this year.
Which is hilarious in that he was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Well, this is the thing. It's not even he was in a film that was nominated for Best Picture. So this is what I'm saying. Someone with some common sense on the team that was responsible for putting together this package should have said, "Yeah, I know we can't have everyone, but I feel like if this person appeared in one of the films that's nominated for Best Picture, we probably need to include
10 nominations.
Yeah.
One of the most nominated films of the year.
But and it was the last film that he made in his life.
Well, here's the thing. Okay. this isn't rocket science. I don't understand this. If somebody works for the Academy Award show all year round, because it takes a year to put this together. It's their job on January 1st. It's somebody's job to open up a Word file. And every time a celebrity dies, they write that name in the file. And they continue that file till the end of December, and even maybe before, like Kobe Bryant, even a month or two before the Oscars. So now you don't wait. You don't do this by memory. It's their job when they wake up every day to read Variety, read the New York Times, read the LA Times, and if there's somebody involved in the movie business, whether it's a star, behind the scenes person, they write the person's name down in this file. When it's time to put the show together, you take this list, not just to people in the Academy, take this list to a well-known critic or a movie expert and say, please put a check mark next to the names that you think deserve to be on here, that if we didn't, people would get upset. Now, Michael J. Pollard, there is no millennial who knows who Michael J. Pollard is. But he was in Bonnie and Clyde, and he was nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
And yet, he was overlooked because the people putting this list together don't know their history.
Well, then they shouldn't be just putting that simple. My feeling is you shouldn't even have to go to someone to have the list looked over. You should just hire someone for the job who knows what they're doing.
Well, something. My point is that this is so easy to fix. And yet every year, the inevitable story after the Oscars is, who did they snub? And then you look at the names and you go, okay, I get why they, why on some of the, like maybe Tim Conway, but it doesn't matter. If you're going to put, you know, Tim Conway was in movies. If you're gonna do it, do it. You can't do it half-assed.
Right.
It's either an in memoriam for people who were in movies who passed away, or it isn't. Now the Luke Perry thing to me was a glaring mistake. But like I said, it's not just who's cool. I mean, these people, to your point, they couldn't even. You would think that that Luke Perry would get on there just because of Beverly Hills 90210.
Right.
And they didn't even put him on for that. I mean, so I don't know who's making these, but my gosh, it's such a simple fix. Just create an ongoing list as the years go on and then have several people vet this list. It's so simple.
Yeah, because, I mean, they have to know that certain people being omitted will cause the inevitable uproar the next day.
Now, finally, were you shocked by Parasite?
Wait, before we go on to that, I cannot believe that you, speaking of the in memoriam piece, did not, you have nothing to say about Billie Eilish performing the song.
Well, I'm not even going to get into that.
Well, I just think it's weird. I think, again, that's another sign of like a desperate reach for younger viewers. Because it's a bit odd to have like a 17-year-old. Yeah,
she has no clue. This is not a there's no question that they're trying to be hip. You know, now she's, you know, there's also rumors that she's going to do the song, you know, for a James Bond movie, which is always a big deal, even though nobody goes to see James Bond movies anymore.
I just thought for sure she would be on your list of grievances.
No, you know what? At that point, that was so, you know, that to me, the you know, I was, that was such an obvious, you know, once again, acquiescence to that by that time I was like, oh, no surprise there. If you got Eminem screaming at me, then I'm not surprised you have Billie Eilish out here with Phineas.
Yes. You know, well, Phineas, he's not too bad.
Okay, well, call me in 3 years.
Got it. Good head on his
shoulders. Call me when Millie Vanilli Billy, nobody even knows who she is, okay?
Oh, jeez.
Because she's going to be she's going to be 20 years old, and she's going to be like, remember me?
Yeah.
So anyway.
All right, Parasite.
Parasite. Now, you know, were you surprised by that? I was shocked by that.
Okay, wait. Okay, before we even talk about this, let me just say, do not tell me the twist. No spoiler alerts, because I haven't seen it yet, but I'm going to watch it this weekend. Okay. Was I surprised? Look, I was not surprised. I mean, they won a lot of awards, and I thought the guy, the director, whatever, he was very cute.
Boom, Joon-ho.
I thought all his speeches were very sweet. I was very surprised that they won Best Picture. And honestly, I mean, this is one of the other reasons why the Oscars do and should exist. I am now, because of that, like making it a point. I mean, I had heard about it. My mom said to me, like, you really have to watch this movie. It's really great. And so I was already planning to watch it, but that just it made it more urgent for me. I'm like, I need to see this. And I especially need to see it too, because there is some kind of big twist in it, and not, you know, I don't want to accidentally read about it, you know, now that it's getting a lot of press and whatever. But yeah, I was surprised. What about
you? Here's the thing. For the last 4 or 5 years, pardon my voice, the last 4 or 5 years, the Oscars have put out their nominees, and many people have, you know, balked at the fact that they have been less than diverse in terms of gender or race. They even started the hashtag OscarSoWhite back in 2015. There were, you know, efforts by the Academy by 2020, ironically, that they were going to double the amount of women and minorities in the voting Academy. And so in 2020, what happened? We got all white, mostly there was only a few. It was dominated by white actors and no women in the best director category.
Yeah.
So in 2020, which was the goal year, nothing really changed. As much as there's always been this call for change and these strategic moves, nothing really changed. So what we've had, basically, is the Academy Awards, their nominations come out in January. And then after the nominations come out, then there is one last vote. And so then, after these nominations come out, and they're mostly white and men, and everybody screams about it, then the voters, in an effort to show that the Oscars aren't racially biased or aren't gender biased, they go to the other extreme, and then when they vote for the winners, then they just go, they come completely gender and color conscious and go overboard.
Okay, so are you saying you think that's the reason Parasite won Best Picture?
Parasite should have won Best International Film, Best Foreign Film, which it did.
Yeah.
I don't believe that it should have won Best Picture because...
Well, I'll tell you this before you... I don't think that a film should be allowed to enter for both Best Foreign Language Film and Best Picture.
Well, that's
my
point.
I think it should be either. If you're going to go for it,
exactly. So that's my point. So if you're going to get if you got the Best International Film, and don't forget, this was the first time in history this ever happened. And that's my point about this overcompensating. This had never happened before. But I think they were so sensitive to the outcry of, once again, mostly white, mostly male, that they said, okay, what can we do here to look like we're not that way? And they went so overboard. I mean, all I can say is in one night, in 3 hours, Boon Hoon June Moon has more Academy Awards than Martin Scorsese.
I know.
Now, that to me, in a 50-year career, Boon Hoon Moon made one movie.
Bong Joon-ho. Or it might even be Bong Joon-ho. I don't know.
Right, yeah.
It's definitely not Boon Hoon-ho.
Well, Adil Mazel. Even yeah. I mean, I wish Adil Mazel would have made the same face when Parasite won that she made when Eminem came out.
But look, everyone is saying that it's a really good movie.
I understand that. You know. I understand that. And I'm not saying that Martin Scorsese should have won. But I believe that, I mean, even he was shocked when he won Best Director.
Look at who else is nominated for Best Picture. Oh, yeah, Best Director, I agree. That guy should have been totally shocked.
Yeah.
But look, it's like 1917, dull. Ford versus Ferrari.
Oh, yeah.
Don't
oh, no.
care. Joker, all about one person's performance. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Now, that one, to me, was the only real contender.
Yeah.
The Irishman. Too long. Little Women. I'm sure
no
it's amazing,
it.
But been done before.
Yeah,
you know,
a million times.
Tons of times. Jojo Rabbit. That's supposed to be really good, too.
Yeah,
kind of quirky.
Out.
More
yeah.
of a comedy, I think. So, you know.
Too far
and then
out
Marriage
there.
Story. Totally
yeah.
depressing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
No,
I mean,
no,
maybe
but my
the real
point is,
only competition there was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, I just think that, I mean, Best Director. And here's my simple fix for Best Director. Okay, this has been the biggest, argument that every year female directors are historically, overlooked, which is
yes.
true, and especially
yeah.
today since there's more of them. Here's the thing, this takes 2 seconds to fix. If you have gender specific categories for actors, then why can't you have a gender specific category for director?
I mean, it's an idea for sure, but
the thing is,
is outrageous that I don't think you should have to have that for like Greta Gerwig to just have gotten a nomination this year. I mean, that's ridiculous.
But my point is this way, when the Academy Awards first started in 1928 or 29, women were not directing films, or they certainly weren't in directing them, you know, with any kind of, you know, major presence. So at the time, the idea of having a gender-specific category was not really necessary. However, in the last 10 years, especially in the last five, times have changed. The Oscars have shown that they change. They add new categories. They expanded the number of nominees from 5 to 10 for Best Picture. So these could be changed. Why not simply make a gender-specific Best Female Director, Best Male Director? You are now assuring that 5 women a year will get recognized, and 1 woman will win an Oscar. What's so hard about that? Who would argue with that?
I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. What's so hard about that? Now, as from being a woman, do you think that that's acquiescing or diluting the award?
Well, I mean, I guess, like I said, I guess that a lot of women might feel like, why should it have to take that for women to finally get recognized?
Right, but you have Best Actress and Best Actor. So what if we only had Best Actor and women and men were in the same category? What do you think would happen then?
There would be fewer people nominated, but I guarantee you it would not always be 5 men.
Well, but my point is,
or I would certainly hope that it would.
Well, I don't know, but my point is what you're creating.
Five men?
But my point is, why create the atmosphere for controversy when you can, if you've already got gender specific categories in the acting arena? Best Director, now we are reflecting a change in the industry that more women are directing. More women are directing high profile projects. More women are in demand. All they're doing is reflecting society. I don't see what the problem is. I don't think it dilutes the category, or the Oscar at all. But it certainly makes sure that at least 5 women, 5 direct women directors a year are going to get recognized.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to do something, and so maybe that will be one option. I don't know.
But I'm just when I saw that he won the Best Screenplay, I figured, okay, you know, Boone Joon Moon, what is it, Boone? What is it?
I think it's
Boone Joon
Bong, Ho?
Right? Bong Joon Ho, is it?
I think. I don't know for sure I don't remember how Bong. They were pronouncing it the other
Let's
night,
just call him Bong. When Bong wins the best.
Boong or Bong?
Oh, is it Boong?
I don't know, but I kind of hope it's Bong.
Okay.
Boong. It's probably Boong.
Boong. So if Boong, if Boong wins, when he won the best screenplay, then I said, okay, they gave him that one because, you know, this film has taken a lot of people by surprise, regardless of the subtitles, which is really that's quite an achievement in itself, that people would, you know, be willing to really be this into a film that has subtitles.
Yeah, people are lazy. They don't like to have
exactly
subtitles.
So the fact that they gave him the original screenplay, I said, okay, that makes sense because this film has gained a lot of momentum and they want to give him his due because they're clearly not going to give him director. They'll win the international film, the foreign film, because it's not going to get best picture. And when he got the best director, I mean, I think he was embarrassed.
Yeah.
He actually called out Martin Scorsese. I mean, I think he was embarrassed. And so this is my point is, what I don't like to see this, you don't rectify one injustice with another injustice. And inevitably, if you try to correct something in one big gesture, you always do that. So now my point is that Parasite won 4 Oscars, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Godfather only won 3.
I know, but you
The
can't.
Godfather Part 2 only won 3. Parasite now has more Oscars than Martin Scorsese and both Godfather films. And I think,
Apple, you can't really
compare. I don't think it is. I think that there was such outrage once again, and they're always afraid of this, you know, this perception that they're out of touch, that they're biased and racist and just basically filled with a bunch of old men, old white men, you know, voting for their own. And so I think that when there, once again, the controversy came after the nominees, literally minutes after the nominees were announced, that then that next month and a half, when they vote once again for the winners, they tried to, and I'm not trying to downgrade the film. I haven't seen the movie myself, but everything you hear about it is amazing. So I'm not saying it's not a good film, but to have gone so overboard to make sure that the next day there was an Asian guy on the front page, that's what they wanted.
Well, we have to see. I have to see the movie before I can really, you know, weigh in on that. But I also think that you also have to remember that it, also, again, like maybe it won more awards than The Godfather, but it also had the benefit of being able to submit itself in both the Best Picture and the Best Foreign Film categories.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
Which I feel are the same category,
right.
Just that there's a separate foreign language film. So I feel like you can either submit for a foreign language film, or you're submitting your foreign language film as just a regular feature film.
I think you're right.
Because that gave them one extra award.
Yeah.
That so if you really want to compare, which I say you can't really compare, because again, in those years we'd have to go back and look and see how big how powerful the other movies were that they were, you know. Because I mean, Goodfellas did not. That was an amazing movie. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. But the year that was nominated, there were so many other really good films.
Dances with Wolves.
And this year, like I said, I feel like this year was kind of like the only real strong contender in that category was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, you know? So it's hard to say. That's why it's hard to, you know.
I understand that, but I'm just saying now in history, this is the way it is. And so, you know, these are the numbers, whether it's apples or oranges or not. My point is, in an effort to even the score and to change the perception, you know, we always then go to the extreme. And I think that this was, I'm not, you know, relegating the film or denigrating him at all and the film. But I think, the fact that it never happened in history that a best foreign film, and I think also this was a reaction and a do-over, because many felt that last year the film Roma should have won.
For which best film?
Roma.
Oh, Roma, yeah.
Which won for best, foreign film. But many people thought that should have won for best film, best picture. And so I think, once again, that was a do over there. And as I said, you know, what's so funny is this is my point. It gets back to my earlier point about you are who you are. Stop trying to change. They added five more nominees to the best picture as a reaction to the fact that the year before, The Dark Knight was not nominated for Best Picture, or did not win, I believe. I can't remember which one. But the thing was that it's not fair that, you know, these cartoon movies that are so popular are not getting nominated. So that's why no one's watching, because the movies that people see at the films during the year are not the ones that are nominated. And so they increase the number in order to get more films in there that hopefully would create more interest and would include more of box office hits than just artsy hits.
Right.
And now what won this year?
Well, what?
Film with subtitles. So what did your 10 nominees do for you? Because the winner was a film that 7 people saw.
Right. Well, I think a lot. I think that film's getting.
But my point is, I'm not saying that 7 people saw it, but more people saw Avengers Endgame than saw Parasite. Right.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and so my point is, they increased the number of of nominees so that more of those films would get nominated and get attention and maybe draw people to watch. But at the end of the day, they're still voting for artsy movies.
Right.
They're still, that's still, because to your point, if that didn't win, if Parasite doesn't win, the most odds on winner was supposed to be 1917, which got really shut out as well. It's a big, long, boring, to your point, big, long, boring war film, right?
Right. I have zero interest in watching that movie.
But if Parasite hadn't won, then that one would have won. Another movie that the majority of people would have never seen.
Right.
And even to your point, like you said earlier, even if it won, you still wouldn't have seen it.
That could have swept the awards, and I still would have no interest in watching that. No thank you.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like I said, I just look back at this and I see I felt that there was kind of an overcompensation and an overkill in order to right some of these politically correct wrongs that the Academy seems to just inherently do every year, even though they say they're not, and they're doing things to change it. It never changes. They're changing the show to appeal to audiences that are not watching it.
I know.
I mean, when you see that this is the lowest rated, I mean, here's my point. So now we're sitting around the table. What if you were now in a post-mortem? You worked for the Academy, right? And now on tomorrow, we're having a post-mortem meeting on our 2020 ceremony. What do you do for next year?
I guess I say 5 women in the directing category. No men. It'll be an entire shutout. No, I don't know.
I think that unfortunately, and we've all been in these situations, especially if you work in a corporate world, you know that suddenly there becomes a groupthink, that there is a prevailing kind of vision, and if you raise your hand and you are devil's advocate, you are viewed as not a team player.
Right.
Even if you have legitimate, points, and even if after the thing happens and what you said would happen happened, you still get no points for that.
Right.
And so you're viewed as an agitator. You're not a team player. But all you're trying to do is say, look, gang, I'm just trying to make this the best it can be. There has to be. I can't believe there's not some voice screaming in the wilderness at some of these things after this. My fear is that they had their post-mortem meeting and they were like, great job.
Yeah, are you kidding me? Great job. They'll be submitting themselves for an Emmy, okay? Like, please. That's, of course they're patting themselves on the back.
I mean,
but this is why they have the same problem every single year.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I can't see myself not watching it, but I'll tell you, if you would have told me 10 years ago that I would find myself not watching the Grammy Awards, I would say, well, that's impossible because I love music. I don't watch the Grammy Awards. I don't even turn it on. It doesn't. It's of no interest. It's irrelevant in terms that the awards themselves have become overshadowed by the performances. And that's my point here too. Is that the awards are supposed to be the most important things of the Oscars, not the dance sequences, not the monologues, the awards. That's right. Why I enjoy watching the Screen Actors Guild, because there's no BS.
Yeah, no faff.
They give out the awards. It's a 2-hour show. They give out the awards, and we're done. Now I know that that will never happen with the Oscars, but I just think that you're either the Oscars or you're not. You're either this is who we are, and come to my party because it's the coolest party there is, and you'll see why. Because if I start to say, oh well, what do you think is cool? Now I'm diluting who I am, and I think that's what the Oscars have been doing. And now, like I said, the ratings, lowest in history. I mean, I hope to God I don't get to the point where the Oscars are not on and I'm not interested in watching them, but we're getting to that point.
Yeah, I mean, but I think you still will, because the films that get nominated, I think there are always going to be a lot of films that you like and you appreciate and they're in your wheelhouse, right?
Yeah.
Versus the Grammys have totally gotten away from us at this point, because that even the nominations are all about whoever is in the charts,
right?
You know?
Yeah. But I'm just saying, I mean, I'm just watching the last several years. It seems like they're going out to sea without a rudder. They just don't know. They're throwing everything up to see what sticks, and nothing is sticking. And what they're throwing up is throw up. I mean, it's just I think that if they want to be the gold standard, then, like, you know, I just watched the Westminster Dog Show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that has been around for 150 years, whatever it is. It's the same format. Nothing has changed. I've been watching that thing for 15, 20 years now. Nothing has changed, and nothing will change. That's what the dog show is. You either watch it and buy into it, or you don't. But they're not changing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And that's what
that is why you are the only person still watching the Westminster Dog Show.
But you know what? The Madison Square Garden was filled. And because, as I said, no one's watching. If I wouldn't mind if you said, Jim, you're so out of touch because 50 million people watch the Oscars. So you're out of touch. You don't know what you're talking about. No. The lowest ratings in the history. So
I know they keep going down every year.
Yeah. So my point is, you can say, oh, well, you know, you're out of touch. Well, in their effort to be in touch, they're out of touch. So I think you just have to say, here's who I am. And you either like me or you don't. And revel in what you do best. Because to having Janai Manai start the show was horrendous. It was horrendous. You know, and then, like you said, here's the best part. How about when they actually turn the lights out on the Best Picture winners and move the camera over to Jane Fonda?
Yeah. But see, that's
the thing. The audience literally had to chant to put the lights back out on them.
Well, but when Tom Hanks says lights up, then, oh, okay.
But
Tom Hanks told us to turn the lights on. We better do it.
But I mean, but my point is, that's how out of touch, because they're looking at this going, oh my God, it's 10:37 or it's 10:35. We have to get the show over. It's like, no. If you had time for Janai Manai and all that other bullshit, then you have time for the Best Picture winner. I mean,
right. Let these people talk. Let them get their award.
And here's the best part. Okay, the woman who won for Best Score. Do you remember her?
Yes.
Okay.
For The Joker, right?
Yeah.
She won for The Joker.
Yeah. Okay. Nobody knows who she is.
Right.
At all. She went on for 25 minutes. No playoff. No music. Whatsoever. They let her ramble.
I don't remember her talking for that
long. Oh, believe me. If it was 5 minutes, it was 4 minutes and 30 seconds too long.
Yeah.
No one knew who she was. They were giving her a standing ovation for no reason. I don't know if this was the guy's wife. I think it may have even been the guys who directed the... I don't know, but my point is, if you let her ramble, then you got to let everybody ramble.
Right.
And,
I agree.
And you don't, and the Best Picture, we have been waiting 4.5 hours for this. And then you cut to Jane Fonda. I mean, literally turn the lights out on them.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, that was almost as disrespectful as the wrong envelope.
Right. Well, at least the wrong envelope was like just a mistake. The person who makes the decision to like play them off and shut the lights out, that is like a conscious, deciding,
right,
we are not having any of this anymore.
Well, you know,
we need Jane Fonda to wrap it up.
And here's the best part. I don't know if you remembered it because it was very quick and it jumped out at me. So if in Chris Rock's and Steve Martin's little skit there, they made reference to the wrong envelope being given out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Rock said, "Well, it was nobody's fault." What do you mean it was nobody's fault? It was somebody's fault. Somebody gave him the wrong envelope.
It was the guy from the accounting firm.
Yeah, but my point is
too busy
is
taking
now,
selfies.
But see
backstage.
Now, yeah. But this is my point. But now to rewrite history, because everybody gets a trophy and nobody can take. We have now that's being viewed as well. It was nobody's fault. It was just an unfortunate situation. No, it was somebody to get. It was somebody's job. That was their only job that night.
Yeah.
To make sure that the people get the right envelopes. That's all that they were there for. They were not there to take pictures. It was somebody's fault. So don't just, now 3 years later, it was nobody's fault. No, no, no. It was somebody's fault. That's the same thing like this show is. You can't just say, it's 10:37 here. Cut the Koreans.
Oh.
Because that's basically what they said. That's basically what they said. You know what? I hate to sound
right. I agree. It was a terrible move.
Because you know what? Because they felt that they weren't going to give any big, speech like Joaquin Phoenix. You know what I mean? They're like, they're just going to be talking about some names that nobody knows, and they speak broken English. That to me was very racist. What they did.
I agree with you.
Yeah. Because they felt like, these people, they can't speak English. It's broken English. No one can understand this anyway. Let's go.
Right.
And it's like, no, sorry. They won your best picture. They deserve to be on for 25 minutes if they want to be.
Yeah. I mean, they produced the best picture of the
year.
Yeah, so
which is what this whole event is built around. Oh. Well. So out of 10.
Another year. We should say now, another year, another Oscars debacle.
Another debacle. Oscar, Oscar, Oscar. Well, with that, wow, we spoke for more than an hour and a half on that.
Wow.
But you know what?
Well, it is our Super Bowl.
It is true. It only happens once a year.
Yeah.
So, I think we touched on major topics. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for next year, but it's going to be interesting. So let's just make a quick prediction here. Do you believe they'll have a host next year or not?
I'm going to say there's going to be a host. I think they'll bring a host back.
I'm going to say I think you're right. I think, yeah.
Oh,
well, it's not because there should be. It's because right. This year was so bad that that's their only, their only quick fix would be, well, I guess we need a host. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I think it was universally, I don't think anybody said that this was a good Oscar show.
Right.
You know, so I think. I just hope they get the right person. I don't know who it's going to... I mean, I would have to say I would not be surprised. Although, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler are doing the Globes next year.
I think so, and I don't think they want to do the Oscars.
Yeah.
I think they should go for Steve Martin or Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin again. Because, I think
I think they're going to have a woman.
Memory, that was the best
situation they had. I think they're going to have Lizzo.
Hmm?
Lizzo.
What do you think Lizzo's going to open the show?
She's going to open the show with her giant thighs, and we're going to see that for
25
minutes.
Gosh. Okay.
Well, I'm just saying. She would probably – they're going to – I think they're going to have a woman host.
I like that she's body positive. Okay,
I understand. I know.
I don't know. Ellen did it for a number of years. I think,
They will have a woman do it because too many men have too much baggage.
That's true. Well, that's why I'm thinking of like a Steve Martin or someone like that who's just kind of,
Well, you know what? I like Steve Martin, but I got news for you. And I love Steve Martin, and he was one of my first comic influences and everything else. But, he's like 75. And it's time.
Okay.
Yeah. No. I mean, it was.
He doesn't want. He doesn't need to do it. And it's probably a lot. Like, why does he? Why would he? You know, why get yourself into that?
I know. Yeah. I mean, when he came out, when I saw, because I didn't know he was coming out with Chris Rock, I just felt like, oh, they're going for a nice, safe, easy. You know, yeah. Everybody likes Steve Martin.
Right.
So how do you go wrong? No one can complain about this.
Right.
You know. But I think it's going to be a. I don't know if it's going to be Ellen or not, but I do think. And my question is, why can't you have? I mean, why can't you like Billy Crystal? Yeah, I understand Billy Crystal was a comedian and an actor too. But why can't you have like I don't know? Why can't you have Jane Fonda be the host?
Well, Jane Fonda doesn't want to do it.
No, but why my point is, why do you have to have? I don't want to see because if Ellen comes out, she's going to start dancing.
Well, they could bring out, you know who would be great then? Bring back Whoopi Goldberg. Because Whoopi does not want to do any of that stuff. She's not going to be taking yeah. selfies with the audience. Right. She's not going to be bringing in pizzas and stuff.
Yeah, well, that's
she's
not just, a bad, you know. That's not bad. I think I would like that. She's an Oscar winner too. That's yeah. not a bad choice, but I think they're going to have a woman. But I don't see why you have to even have a comedian. I mean, why can't you just have a host with some gravitas? How cool
okay,
would it be?
Well, then in that
how
case, cool would it then be? They need to bring in like Tom Hanks.
How cool would it but be to have Meryl Streep?
Meryl Streep?
Meryl Streep, the host well, that, of the Oscars.
They would, I'm sure they would love to have her do it. But again, what is in it for her?
Well, no, but nothing. if she comes out, but my no, but she doesn't. Here's my point: you have Meryl Streep come out, and she does what Meryl Streep does. She doesn't come out and tell jokes. She doesn't come out and do selfies. Meryl Streep would lend such a level of class and elegance and history by coming out and saying, "Welcome to the show. We are here to celebrate films and show, and here's why we're here," and show a 5-minute retrospect of some of the best films and the best scenes ever, and show some of the best, and then right up through the 10 nominees or whatever there are next year, and she says, "And now on with the show." What would be so terrible about that?
You know what? From your mouth to the Oscar producer.
Well, I'm telling you. You are there to celebrate. When you watch Jeni Manai, I don't know, was that celebrating films? Was that any celebration of films? Because I shut it out. I turned it off. I turned the volume down. I don't know what was happening.
Right.
That is not a celebration of films. That belongs at the Grammys or somewhere else. But this is my point. That event is supposed to say we are here to celebrate our long history of films, and here they are. So you know what? So maybe the next time, Michael J. Pollard is not forgotten. That's my point. They're not focusing on why they're there. They're there. That, you know, as hacky as the Billy Crystal thing was, it was cool the first year he did it. You know, when he inserted yeah. himself, then it became kind of a cliche. But the original idea when he first did it was genius.
Right.
Celebrating the best movies. He was in movies, either iconic films or movies of that year. Exactly what you're supposed to do. Now, that's not the only idea. There's got to be some other ideas. How do we celebrate films? Let's make this a celebration of film. And my gosh, If you don't think that Meryl Streep celebrates that, then I don't know what you've been watching for the last 40 years.
I think she would be great doing it. I just don't think there's enough in it for her.
Well,
to
I
really
just think if you,
to
but if you,
work
if,
into
well,
it.
I'm just saying if you tailor it correctly, if you say to Meryl, yeah. "Hey, look, Meryl, you're going to come up there, and we're going to give you, and you're going to go out there with, you're going to give popcorn to people. You're going to take selfies. You're going to do a 5-minute monologue making fun of you know people in the audience." No, I wouldn't do it if I was her either. But right. if they did it in a classy way, I guarantee you people would go, "Wow, now that was what a sense of class and elegance Meryl Streep brought to the Academy Awards." That's what they need. That's right. what they need. Well, We'll see what happens. We're both betting on a host, though. That's interesting. So we'll see. Meryl, give me a call, and we'll work this out. Well, once again, Emily, thank you so much for your informed and pointed opinions. And go see Parasite. I have not seen it yet either.
I'm going to see it. I'm going to watch it this weekend. It's a long weekend. I'm going to watch it.
Now, here's my only hope. When people put the subtitles in, they make the writing too small.
Right.
And they put it white. They put white words over white action so that you cannot see the words. They blend in.
Right.
How do we fix this? I mean, isn't somebody watching this in the editing room and saying, I can't read that?
I mean,
when you see that
seems so obvious to us.
I know. But, you know, here's the thing. I don't know if people, when the editor is in there, are they now sitting at a computer screen when they're 2 feet away from it and they could see it?
I think they're walking a fine line. They're walking a fine line between not having the words be too, like, obstructing the movie.
I know, but if it's all in a foreign language.
Because, again, they're fighting an uphill battle because most people don't want to deal with subtitles.
I know, but if you've already established that we're going to have them, the subtitles either have to be in a color, have to be in a square black box.
Yeah, I think that's the right way.
Yeah, I mean, or they have to
white letters in a black box,
or at the very least, white letters that are black outlined. So if they are against lighter colors, they still stand out.
Right.
I mean, it drives me up a wall. There's a show on HBO called The New Pope with John Malkovich. It's very good. Mm-hmm. It was based on the young pope that had Jude Law in it a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And they speak Italian in there quite a bit because it takes place in the Vatican.
Right.
I have no idea what's going on in the show. All the subtitles in Italian are all, there's a white wall, and that's where all the words are.
Right. Yeah.
What color does the Pope wear?
White.
Yeah.
Of course.
So you tell me.
Mm-hmm. So
the Pope is on in every scene. How am I supposed to see white letters when the Pope's wearing white?
Right.
And then when they have the cardinals who have the black robes on, it's all in English. Yeah. It's all in English.
Oh, right.
Then they go out to the sunny gardens where it's all yellow and sunny. More white letters.
Right.
Unbelievable. Thank you, Emily. We will talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Don't forget, every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe, rate this podcast, and to send a message and tell your friends that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. I hope you enjoyed episode 195. This is Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.